Michael Catanzaro is the energy manager for the city of Tucson, and he's got a big job to do. To begin with, he is currently installing more than 13 megawatts of solar across city of Tucson facilities. Big job. And he recently started a revolving loan fund. Big idea with potentially big impact. Mike knows about climate action plans. He knows about climate collaboratives, and he is bringing new ideas and exciting thought leadership to our city. He is sparking sustainability in the desert with the goal of making Tucson a truly more energy efficient city. You'll want to stay with us to hear what he's up to and how helping create a livable city is a win-win for everybody, especially in this era of climate change. It impacts all of our lives, so stay with us. Hi there, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Down to Earth Tucson. So Mike, it is great to have you here for lots of reasons, and the biggest one for me is because of what you're up to, and because I want to get to know you better. It was like, you had me from hello when we first met. It was like, I'm really going to like this guy. But you're really going to get us on the map in terms of energy efficiency. Is that fair to say?
I hope so.
It is great.
I walked in to, I think, what is an ideal situation. We have a lot of opportunities, and my predecessor really set me up with a lot of policies and a lot of projects moving forward that will really, I think, has put us on the map in terms of sustainability. We're doing a lot, as you mentioned,
a lot
of solar right now. And so 43 projects, 13 megawatts across 43 sites. We finished 33. And you hit the nail on the head, though. It's about efficiency. Solar is sexy. People love solar. They see solar panels and they
get
really
excited. It's a feel-good kind of thing.
Absolutely. But you change a light bulb, nobody notices. Nobody cares. But the cheapest kilowatt hour is the one not used. And the cleanest kilowatt hour is the one not used. So efficient.
That's tweetable.
Is efficient. You know, I want to make the city as efficient as possible because first and foremost, I eliminating unnecessary energy use is really critical.
It's really a great way to look at it.
Yeah.
The best kilowatt is the one not used.
Yeah.
I didn't really, that's a good way to put it. And that's really a biggie. So I was curious about who's doing it. Do you have companies that are doing it? Are you hiring out to do it? Or do you have people that work for the city that are installing the solar? How does it work?
Oh, for the solar, we have a major contractor, and their name is Solon. They're incredible.
They're one of the biggest in the world.
And they move quickly. They make these projects so easy. They work with us, and I have a staff, Mandy Leatherland, who's incredible. She manages all the projects. This couldn't get done without her. And she's managed all these projects while continuing to do her day-to-day job, which is managing all the utility accounts for the city. We have over 2,600 utility accounts, just electric accounts.
It's mind-boggling.
And so she aggregates all those bills, makes sure everything is up and up, and then is also managing all of these solar projects on the side. And so if we didn't have great contracts and great partners like Solon, it wouldn't be able to get done. So
I love giving a shout out to them because yeah. I remember when they had one of their big facilities here and I went on a tour and I love everything that they're about. So it's really great. I didn't know that that was your big partner. And like, let's go, like you begin with the end in mind. It's like a big duh, and I hate to say that it's really going to be good in terms of our contributing to a more climate friendly city. But what about money savings? Is it going to save a lot of money because you're not having to pay really high utility bills? Is that part of the end game? And does it factor into it? Because I was thinking, yeah, you're going to save a lot of money, and that's always good for the city. And I don't need to know numbers or anything, but that's a good thing when that happens.
It's a great thing. It's critical, too. But absolutely, yes. I mean, there is enormous energy savings in the projects we've installed already. We're saving about $200,000 a year on those alone.
That is
at the
unreal.
End of the first year, once everything is operational and up, it'll be nearly $500,000 in the first year. And as you look out over the horizon, what we did is we contracted, and the city didn't invest a single dollar end of these solar installations. What we do is we purchase the energy that's produced from them, and that's how they're funded over time. And so those panels will produce for the next 20, 25 years, and we have a flat rate. We have a known commodity expense for all of that solar that's being produced. And so what we pay today is the same that we'll pay in 20 years. And so that really gives us some reliability, the capacity to budget more accurately over time without requiring any investment from the city up front for those installations. So you say it all the time. It's a win-win-win.
It is. It is like the green trifecta.
It's a triple bottom line.
It really is. And I can't help but bring this up because I'm so thrilled that, A, we have the first woman mayor of Tucson, and that is Regina Romero, who ran heavily on a climate change platform.
Absolutely.
She's going to kick some butt in terms of making things happen. I think she'll really stick to that. And it cracked me up because when she came and spoke to our Rotary Club a couple of weeks ago, and she said the number one thing people brought up when she went door to door were the potholes, which I think is hysterical. It's a thing in Tucson. And the number two thing was climate change.
Right.
So that to me is a very informed citizenry. It's they know it's coming. We live in the desert. And I thought that was pretty funny because everybody really cares about the darn potholes that could kind of swallow you up. Okay, so she's going to be really good for our city if you're Mrs. Green. It's like, talk about the green
trifecta. She's going to be a champion, and it's exciting. It's an exciting time, and I think we'll continue to push forward. You know, all of the initiatives are just going to be kind of supersized at this point. And to be honest, the city council has already been pushing. I feel like I see mayor and council on a regular basis. And so they were all really, really supportive. And I think this new mayor and new council will continue to push the envelope even further in terms of what can we do to be more sustainable and greener.
And we need to. I feel like the clock is ticking and the ticking is getting louder. I always liken it to Peter Pan with the croc ticking. And I'm hearing the croc louder and louder and louder. And I was kind of cracking up at my own intro, right?
Because of course you were.
I was. That's really funny. Mike is not personally starting in this revolving loan fund, but you are responsible for it. And it's a big deal because I know about, I'm friends with this guy, Danny Nee, from Community Investment Corporation, and they're lending people money to help these things happen. So tell us, that's the other biggie I want to talk about, the revolving loan fund. How did it even come about, and what's it look like, and who's going to get the money?
So the revolving loan fund is really a mechanism to do what you talked about in your intro, is efficiency. This isn't a pot of money for community development, which some green funds are.
Right.
This is really about taking money, we've earmarked $500,000 to start, to invest in city facilities, capture those savings over time, and then reinvest them in more energy efficiency projects. And so the first thing I'm going to go after is lighting, because that has your best return on investment, and go through, look at gyms, look at those places that really consume a lot and have a lot of lighting. Invest, get those returns. You know, a lighting project, as an example, one of the lighting projects we did was replacing all the fleet lighting. And we have a massive fleet warehouse where we fix all city vehicles and we do all that work for all the city vehicles at the Topsy Service Center over at Park in Ajo. We had about, 1,800 T8s. We changed those to LED, and we went from 32 watts a bulb to about 16, and the project had a total payback of about between 3 and 6 months.
It's unreal how it's an investment in your future forever.
And, instead of replacing bulbs every 6 months, every 12 months, those bulbs will last years and years. So it helps us because we have to do less service on them. They use way less energy, and they literally pay for themselves in half a year. So you're making money hand over fist on a project like that. And then that just grows. It snowballs that energy fund and grows it much, much bigger over time. So we have money to do deep retrofits, which we really badly need to do, is reinvest in city facilities and looking at our HVAC systems, our building envelope, you know, which is
the built environment.
Exactly.
The built environment.
Which, you know, I've been listening and...
Big deal.
Huge. And we're not building a whole bunch of new buildings. We have an existing building stock that's there, and we need to go back in and reinvest and make sure they're as efficient as possible and using as little electricity as reasonably possible so that we're not wasting taxpayer money.
And, you know, I remember way back, a long time ago, I did this project with Sam Levitz, and I actually know Sam, but he had nothing to do with it. It's like, I've been here since dirt, but... He had a champion in his organization that knew all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And they bought, I call it the styrofoam eating machine, because can you imagine the packaging they have? So they invested in a machine that you can actually take your styrofoam there and it turns it back. It recycles styrofoam, which is, you know, the bane of my existence. And they changed out their light bulbs because this guy went to Sam and the owners and said, look, if we spend this much money, this is how much money we're going to save over time forever. And lighting was, bam, first thing they did. Right, Chapman, who's one of my partners, they have such a huge footprint for all the dealerships, 7 dealerships here alone, and a used car and a repair place. They had a facilities manager that got all this, and they started changing out the light bulbs. Something as simple as that. And it does cost money, but the payback is so short. It doesn't take 10 years to get your ROI.
No, not at all.
So that's good for listeners that either work in those big buildings. And, you know, when I had a guest, I don't even remember when it was, because it's all 10-year blur. But when you mentioned it, you glossed over it, gymnasiums are some of the biggest energy vampires in the world. And if they're big open spaces in schools that have to be heated and cooled for very minimal use.
Right.
So any miracles you can come up with on that, and probably at University of San Diego, that was one of your things you looked at? Or did you get there?
Always. I mean, we were there. We were constantly in a state of looking at our buildings and trying to optimize.
We can see what else we can do.
You have different challenges with those types of facilities in terms of TV lighting and those types of things. And so it requires a lot more. But your gyms, like at Udall, at Randolph.
The ones city owns.
Yeah, you know, those are on a lot of the day. Some of them actually are on timers, which is exciting. You know, walking into some of the places as I've been walking around and trying to learn the city, it really gets me excited. This is the sickness, right? Like where you get excited because the lights are off.
That's probably why I liked you in the beginning. He's got that same disease I have. Yeah. We can do this.
And so, but in a lot of cases, you know, gyms aren't on occupancy sensors. But, you know, I was really excited to see, I think it was Clement Center that may have been on it. It was actually Donna Liggins Park.
Okay.
That was on an occupancy sensor, which is just wonderful.
It's really cutting edge. Like big deal.
They're not that way, and they go on at 6 or 7 when the center opens, and goes off at 8 or 9 or 10 when the center closes. And those are huge opportunities for savings.
No kidding.
So
we don't need. I don't think we're going to need. much heating anymore forever. Like Monday, we're in November, and it's like, are you joking that it's 90 degrees?
Right.
But then I heard the weather forecast for the Northeast, and I thought, okay, I'll take 90. I don't want 5 below.
Right?
I do not want 5 below. We were talking about it at our Rotary Club this morning and saying, it's gonna cool off eventually. Yeah, we're all saying it like we're trying to make each other believe it. It is. It is going to get
half
below
of it
80.
Is just believing it. You know,
you just have to believe. I wish believing could make it so. So I want to go a little bit. If we could turn back time, and that's I really don't. But you were the first director of sustainability for the University of San Diego, and you really did have a big impact. And I mean you. Not just in the energy arena, but with water and CO2 reductions. I did my homework, Mike, and creating an electronics recycling center, all of which placed that little city in which you lived, that's a world. The University of San Diego is a world, created a more livable city, a more financially economical city. What's the big vision for your job? You have a lot already on your plate, but what are some of the things you'd like to see from the big dreams you made come true there in terms of what you want to do here? Because I know you're on a man with a mission. I just know
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Well, there it was really taking nothing, you know, and I shouldn't say nothing because there were initiatives and, you know, facilities professionals have been doing sustainability work.
Right.
Not under
right.
that label, but forever. And they've been doing it as cost savings, you know, and because they're trying to manage their budgets, they didn't have necessarily the label of sustainability to title those kinds of efficiency projects they were doing, but they were trying to control costs and all of the ways that they do that. So it's trying to take a combination of that and then really look at what or what didn't for the university. It was what did we do well,
right?
And what were our real areas of opportunity and growth, and trying to leverage all of those things, and where were we just missing? And so we took a what wasn't a program at the time, almost, you know, just over 10 years ago.
And made it one.
Right.
How fun is that? If I ran the zoo.
It was a top 10 program in the nation for state, for colleges and universities.
Yep.
And so without a whole lot of extra investment from the university, we were really lucky to get a lot of grants and a lot of outside money. We had a really good partnership with our utility that funded energy efficiency projects. And so as I look at what can we do here in Tucson, I mean, I think one of the things that's on the horizon is a climate action plan for the city. I think that...
Oh, I used to have a bell. Where's my bell? No, I still have a bell. I rarely ring the bell, Mike, but it's like, yes, climate action plan.
Right.
And implement it. And I think Rahina will really help make that happen. You need
She'll
to have a plan.
There's, yeah. there's no
Pima
doubt.
County has a plan.
Right.
And they're in the implementation phase of that, and it has to happen.
And hopefully we can work in parallel with the county and parallel with the university and really develop a plan that's regional in the way I think in the approach and having consistent goals throughout the region, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for the city to go way above and beyond something that the county is willing to do or say that the university is willing to do. And I know the university is going to be pushing because that's a huge initiative of theirs.
Totally.
And President Robbins, I think, is behind it. And you've had some speakers on talking about that. So I think that that's the next step for the city of Tucson is really developing a comprehensive climate action plan and resiliency plan. You know, we can do all the climate action planning and reduce our emissions, but in reality, we also need to be prepared for what it's going to be, what kind of weather
right.
and what kind of weather events we have to look forward to.
Right.
100-year storms are going to be 10-year storms or
so
more
true.
Common. And so what do we need to do? What kind of infrastructure do we need to have to really be a resilient city?
You know,
potholes would be a lovely problem, you know, in the context.
No, can we say, oh, you're so right. Oh, Mike, you're so right. In the big picture, it's just like, they're just really annoying. So I feel, having been here a really long time and just doing this for 10 or 11th year, close to 12, I have never felt as though we do have the perfect storm. We have the city on board. It's not like you have to push this uphill. There are people that really want to see it. They see the future and they know it's hot, right? And President Robbins, ever since I've been here, which is 40-some years, we've never had a president that's being showing up in many ways
mm-hmm.
as supportive as he is about the university, not just what they're doing with their huge footprint, but partnering
right.
and being part of the UC3 and all of that. They want to step up their game, and then the county. So big players can bring about big change. I had two people on. We did an interview. It's going to come out next week with Tammy McKay and Candace Ruprecht from TEP and the City of Tucson Water,
mm-hmm.
talking about not necessarily doing partnerships with each other, but the power of partnerships and how a lot of their initiatives align in terms of educating kids,
mm-hmm.
the earlier you can get them, the earlier you have them, and the better change. A lot of times the kids are bringing the message home. So, I mean,
totally.
I get excited. And in this space, sometimes it's really hard to get excited and to see
That's
positive.
Yeah.
It's really true. There's all kinds of names they have for it about, you know, climate change. They're saying there are people that are depressed, literally, because of they have mental challenges, mental illness because of climate change. Depression is a big deal with a lot of climate activists and scientists. And I have a friend here in Tucson.
When you realize the complexity,
the enormity of it,
of the issues, and
yep,
how much the world is going to need to transform. We could transform Tucson, and
it's
unfortunately not have
a bucket.
Much of an impact.
Agreed.
At all. On the world, but it's about getting a critical mass. It's about the tipping point, which you totally understand.
Point.
And saying, look, as a community, as a group, we are going to face this. And, you know, by the way, this is all good. I cannot, you know, we are in the early enough stages where all of this has a positive environmental impact. And who does, you know, clean air is
like,
paramount.
Who doesn't want clean air? Raise your hand.
We can save money. We're especially in the early stages of a climate action plan, but you can objectively, no question, save money. Now, when you get to the later stages where you have to make investments, they may not have that direct return on investment. There's the indirect return on investment. But, you know, in the first 5 or 10 years of a climate action plan, you really should be investing on projects that save you money and make you more resilient. And I think at the end of the day, have like a positive effect on your bottom line. So it's not like they're competing interests, even though I think it's been framed as either the environment or the economy. It's a both and.
I know.
Without the environment, the economy is,
you know. All these things that you're doing do help create a more livable city, which do help make the conditions for people staying here, building their businesses here, making us more sustainable in that way. And you know, Mike, I've been thinking about this a lot. One of the things that it's just hitting me more and more and more, regardless of the trajectory we're on for climate change, all these things are the right thing to do.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Like, we should be conserving energy, because why waste energy? There's so many. Why waste water? And to me, it's a consciousness that we didn't have to have before, quite frankly. I mean, I never thought about running out of water 30 years ago. You know, that's not exactly true, because I am a Jersey girl, and we had Mm-hmm. So believe me, my mother was the queen of water conservation. We did not leave water running. We did not take 20-minute showers.
Right.
I mean, it was a very conscious thing in our family. But a lot of this, I've come full circle. It's like, yes, we have to do it. Yes, I believe that the clock is ticking. But no matter what, it's the right thing to do. So it doesn't matter if you believe in climate change or not. We should be doing these things because in and of themselves, as standalones, they're the right thing to do.
Well, I don't like to use the word believe in climate change. That's like believing in Santa Claus, which I do. But it's understand climate change.
Better. Good correction.
It's not a belief. I mean, there's
understanding it. Great, great nuance.
There's science that's explicit. But like you said, it doesn't matter. It's the right thing to do through any lens, the environmental lens, people lens, the social lens, the equity lens. I mean, these are all really positive, really important things to be doing, regardless of that looming climate sort of disaster.
Because that can be overwhelming and shut people down.
Absolutely.
And, you know, somebody challenged me. They told me, because, you know, I'm known as the, like you said, the last straw. I talk about straws all the time.
Right.
And someone said, if we all stop using straws in the world tomorrow, it wouldn't make enough of a difference. And I just looked at them. I said, you know, you're right, but it's the right thing to do. It's waste. It's energy. It's what are we going to do with it? They are putting the straw does go up turtles' noses. I've seen that video, but it's the right thing to do. We have to be conscious of all that stuff like it was in the Depression.
Right.
Be aware of it. And we don't need straws, most people. So it's like, yeah, I know. Stopping all straw use across the globe tomorrow will not really have the biggest impact, but it's the right thing to do. So why not do the right thing? That's how I'm getting to that point now. Turn off the light. It's the right thing to do.
Exactly.
Seriously. Those were the two biggies, and I think we covered a lot of territory. Is there anything else like up big visions for you, or you have enough? I think if I have you on in a year, then we can talk about maybe what's next. But right now, pretty full plate in your job.
Totally. I mean, and there's so much more. I mean, we're working on electric vehicle infrastructure for the city.
Yes, I love that you brought that up.
Converting the fleet.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
And in this climate action plan that is imminent, is going to be significant, you know. And I could sit here and talk for a day about the old climate action plan I created at the university. We developed a really neat framework that I think will translate to any
climate action plan. You'll help do this one.
Oh, for sure. And so those kinds of things are really what gets me excited. And so looking at what can we do in the near term, because those projects, the solar and the efficiency projects, those take a lot of time.
They do.
We also need to start looking forward and looking down the road at those climate action, at the climate action plan for the city and resiliency plan, and say, what can we do? And as a community, and framing it for people, this is not just about city facilities. This is about the community. This is not just about what happens at city buildings. This is about what is the footprint of all commuting within the city? What is the footprint of all buildings, all residences in the city? And what do we need to do from a renewable energy perspective, from an energy efficiency perspective, from a transportation perspective? Because these are all pieces of that carbon
pie.
And
yep.
So, you know, what do we have to do to create a more livable city?
And I love to see the all the bikes, the electric bikes, the charging stations for those. There's so many good things. And yesterday, Tammy and Candace were talking about I lost it. It went away. I'll come back. About the electric bikes, but about, I know what they said. They said even Costco has this charging thing you can buy at Costco for your house, for your vehicles. And I said, if it's come to Costco, it's coming.
Costco's got everything.
They do. And I'm like, if you make it to Costco, that means people, this is in your future.
Yeah.
That's what it was. It was like, I said, you've got to be kidding me. So, and the big mystery to me for years, anytime I had a guest on from TEP or from a car industry, it's like, how are we going to do the infrastructure? And now I am not worried about that at all. When I found out that Exxon and Shell and those companies are buying land all over the country to put charging stations in, they got the memo of where the future is going.
Well, absolutely.
You know, another thing, Mike, it made me happy when Rahina said that the citizens of Tucson were saying their number one was potholes and the second one was climate change. So that's my last question. What are your thoughts on how we can have a citizen, I don't say that word very well, citizenry that's involved? What are some of the ways that you think of? Because I live in this bubble of activists. So I think, well, everybody's involved.
No, you're a lunatic.
I am a lunatic.
Right.
And I go here and I think, oh, everybody thinks that. And then I go out of the city and I'm like, you never heard of what? So it's not that. But what are the most effective ways for people to get involved? Like city council meetings, when there's an issue, it's like a best friends reunion because Tucson is so small, you see all the people you know. But I think there are citizens that are getting it and might want to get involved. What are your thoughts on how that can come about?
Well, that's a harder question. There's the citizens that are, I think of it on a bell curve, and you've got the activists on the far right, you've got the never will do it on the far left. And then in that middle is that big bell curve of the majority of folks. And how do you engage them? You know, in terms of just actually getting engaged, we have a commission on climate, energy, and sustainability that I help organize for the city. They meet every, the third Thursday of every month. Third Wednesday of every month. And you can find that on the city website for the Commission on Climate, Energy, and Sustainability. That's one way to sort of see what's happening at the local level. I think that what we need to do is spread the message of the sort of these, it's not mutually exclusive environment or economy.
Right.
People
Such
can
a good point.
Do the right thing, like you said, and it saves them money. You know, and where there's investment required, I know Tucson Water provides incentives and rebates. I know TEP provides rebates and incentives to help lower the initial cost. But it's about making those little changes, you know.
And it's exciting.
Right.
I mean, Tammy told us about this thing yesterday that I still don't have my head around. And it's like, she'll kill me for saying this, but like it's an air conditioner for your water heater. And it really isn't. But that's it. The outcome's the same. Like for this brain, this non-mechanized, mechanical, not left brain, right brain.
Right.
She said there's a little device that costs some money, but what it does is basically cool the area where your water heater is. so that it cools your garage. And that helps too. I mean, this, she said there's some woman that's a welder and she makes jewelry and she had one put in and she said, my garage is so much cooler these days. All that helps.
Yeah.
All that helps.
It's the little things that really add up over time. But it's, I think about, clearly we have an engaged citizenry.
Because I agree.
With what you said, with what Rahina found when she was out knocking on doors. That's remarkable that that's in the minds and the conscience
of
people.
Mind. It's,
you know,
so great.
And look, to me, it just means we need to take action.
Yeah, take action.
And we need to, and for me, it's leading by example. Having the U of A, having the city of Tucson, having Pima County show and report out and really celebrate the savings and the benefits of all of the projects I know we're undertaking. And it's not just us. There's all the companies in town. The larger companies really understand, and maybe some of the small ones, but we hear about it.
They do.
And the more we sort of tell our story and people like you sort of celebrating it and bringing it to light for folks is really, I think, will help push us along. But, you know, Tucson's supposed to be this like hip city, right? And so I think we fundamentally get it. We have Prop 407 now that's going to rebuild,
right?
Work on our passageways and our thoroughfares so that we can bike more safely and we can do all of those things.
Yeah, we have the loop.
Yeah.
We have the loop. You know what else I say to people? You want to do something and you're a homeowner? Plant a tree or two three.
I couldn't be more with you on that million tree
challenge. Katie Gannon will love it.
When are you
going to
start to... Beat that drum.
Beat that drum. I'm beating it. You know that. You and I talked about it when we had the president's roundtable. I just want us to plant a million trees in a year, and Katie Gannon would love it and be able to execute it from Tucson Clean and Beautiful. And it is one thing that you can do that has a ripple effect for rainwater, stormwater management. I mean, it's a really good thing, and there are programs that you can participate in that make that very affordable, lots of opportunities for low-income families. So that's one thing that everybody can do. And the other thing is, I want to try to remember to say this on every show, really vote. Like, pay attention to initiatives.
Right.
Pay attention to propositions that are on the ballot. And you know that being in touch with your city council member, your board of supervisor, that matters. If 10 people, if they get 10 letters, they're paying attention. They don't have to get 100. They know that 10 represents the 1,000 more that didn't take action and write.
Absolutely.
Okay, one of the things I love the most about the show, I'm so at ease with you that I say all these things that I want to say sometimes with guests, but like, I'm so corny. I love that I get to have the last word. And it's just like,
of course you
something
are.
We should see. You know me. It's like, of course you would. And I knew you were going to say that. So here's my last word. I'm thinking I'm a bit into being corny these days, and maybe because I happen to believe the world needs more corny. So here it goes. I like Mike Catanzaro, and I knew that the minute I met him. He's a man with a vision. He's an innovator and someone I know is here in my town, in my city, working to make a big difference. As I have said many times before, I've lived in Tucson for a very long time, and I really do love where I live. With people like Mike coming here, I have lots of optimism about how Tucson is growing and evolving, as well as with the people that are already here and adding his voice to their voices. Mike joins the many of us working together in exciting and creative ways to make our city more sustainable, obviously more fun, more innovative, and cutting edge. We really do have some pretty serious challenges, facing us in the years to come in this desert of ours. We know that our weather is getting more extreme, that our water supply has to be very carefully monitored, and that renewable energy has to be top of mind from this point on. And we also know that together we can accomplish so much more than working in silos or separately. Mike Catanzaro makes me feel better about the future of our city because I know we're in good hands and that he will lead the charge, so to speak, in the renewable energy space. He's working for a safe and sustainable future for all of us, because now he lives here too. Mike, thanks for showing up here, for having fun with me, for all the work you're doing, and for showing up for our city. I appreciate it, and you.
You bet.
Everybody, thank you all for being a part of our world and for your feedback and for letting me know what you like and what you don't. And remember, turn off that light switch. And my last, but certainly very not least, thanks goes to the City of Tucson, Department of Environmental and General Services. You're a great partner, and thanks for your support.